session number 27460, reel 27.
Wilkes, reel 27. You were on this. You were receiving Chinese hospitality. What form did that take?
Well, let me tell you. To start with, the people that we'd originally located that we could talk to and do business with, it was a Chinese family. Yes, they were a Chinese family who'd been rice exporters pre-war. Now, they consisted of the elderly people, husband and wife, and daughter-in-law and grandchild in a hammock. Not a cot, she just swung it in a hammock. Now, the daughter-in-law was the only person that spoke English, so she always acted as interpreter when we'd been to negotiate. And she would negotiate with other Chinese for eggs and whatever the bartering had to be, so it made it quite easy for us. So this day when I arrived and I went to the door, I was greeted with smiles all round, come in, and then I said I would like to get back as soon as possible, and she said, oh, I'm afraid you can't. And for a moment, I was a bit worried. I thought the fact that I was on my own, they were taking advantage of me. But it wasn't so. She explained that having set foot on their veranda, being under their roof, I had to be fed before I could leave. And so they were making a meal, and I would be fed in due course. So I was quite concerned about this. And she was quite charming all the time, you know, but I think I was pretty worried. Anyway, later on, when I think the meal was getting near to being ready, the old mother-in-law came in, jabbered away in Chinese, and away she went. So I said to this lady, I said, do the Chinese still use chopsticks by any chance? Being a bit worried because... And she started laughing. She said, did you understand what my mother-in-law said? I said, no, why? She said, she asked whether she should give you chopsticks or whether to give you a spoon and fork. She said, I've asked her to give you a spoon and fork. So that was that. So a little bit later, there was an Indian gentleman came along. And I think he knew the drill. He'd come for his dinner. He came along. And, I'd already said to this lady, because she'd explained, I would have to sit at the table by myself, eat my fill, and give a big healthy belch when I'd finished, to let them know I'd finished. But it was customary to leave a little. So I thought, right, we'll do the best. She eventually had agreed to sit at the table and guide me through the protocol, because I didn't want to offend them in any way. So anyway, with this Indian gentleman arriving, I think she was going to back out, but anyway, she remained. So eventually the meal would be served. I was given the opportunity to go and wash my hands, and they'd had bomb damage or something like that done to their building, and they had a big camouflage net hanging down at one side. And when I went into where I was to eat, I could see all these little eyes peering through between me. So I knew the poor little souls would be hungry, they'd want something. So the father-in-law came along, and he would pour me a substantial whiskey. And I didn't really want it, but I thought, well, just to be right, I'd better drink it. And I thought, if I get it down quickly... But that was my undoing, because he came and filled it up with another one, which remained there to the bitter end. They kept bringing dishes of this and that onto the table, just took a little here. This Indian man, he was really tucking in. He knew what to do. And so eventually, the meal over, and then we'd do the bartering and set off back. On return to my regiment, I think they were about to send a search party out for me. The adjutant was most concerned, and I had to do a bit of explaining to do as to why I'd been so long.
Was the, what state was the population of Rangoon in?
I think a lot of things that had been hidden away and buried were coming to light again. Incidentally, this lady, her husband had been captured by the Japanese and taken away, and the old father-in-law, who had been trying to explain through his daughter-in-law that what they'd been doing, they were making them drink petrol, then setting fire to their breath. And they were most concerned.
This was the father that was happening to the husband.
That's right. Anyway, before we came home, and after a few more visits, bartering, we learnt that her husband was on his way back. He was all right. And
so there were Chinese in Rangoon as well as Burmese.
Oh yes.
And did you feel that they, or could you see that they were mixing all right, or were there problems?
They appeared to be. There were Karens as well. There were some Karens close to where we were billeted, and I know that they were very hungry. We gave them a bit of food. Now, they'd worked ceaselessly for the British, been very brave.
Was there any involvement in trying to get things back to normal, British troops being used in that way?
Yes. I think they probably would be clearing the airfield and the dock area. But I know our own regiment was involved in setting up a camp for released British POWs and trying to get them fed and clothed and equipped, ready. Those that were fit enough to be sent home there straight away, and those that had to be hospitalised.
Did you actually see any of them?
Yes.
What condition were they in?
Very bad.
Did you feel that it was a just war because of what,
Every bit, yes.
Mm-hmm. Were there any Japanese in Rangoon that had been taken prisoners?
I didn't see any.
So, how long were you there?
Oh, well, let's see, the war finished in August, and we came away in the October to come home.
And the whole unit, was it?
Oh, no. The regiment as such remained there. And whilst we were there, I was promoted to sergeant, and we were getting reinforcements that would take over. Of course, being a regular regiment, I think they were subjected to a lot more time out there before they could come home. But the conscripts and the likes of me were to be pulled out and sent home.
So were you getting national servicemen coming in at the end of the war, at the very end of the war, as reinforcements or as replacements?
I think they could be.
But you didn't know?
We just knew there were conscripts as far as we were concerned. So I know shortly before we were due to come home, those of us that were coming, they would have a party in the gunner's mess to sort of let one lot get to know the other. Word was sent out that no one below the rank of sergeant would be admitted. So I'd got on very well with the drivers all the way through, and so they invited me into the party, and the sergeant major, he suddenly spotted me. And I think he was acting as MC or something like that. And he called me over and ordered me out. And he said, you know what the law, the rule is. It was upon orders, no one below the rank of sergeant. Below the rank of sergeant. So, as I made my way back and to collect my odd bits and pieces that I had, the driver said, what's wrong? Where are you going? And I said, I'm not allowed in this party. I'm sent back. So I went back to my billet, but I think I'd only been there about 5 minutes at the most when there was a whole bunch of drivers round. They said, come on, you're coming back. They were told Griff, that was the Regimental Sergeant Major Griffiths, we've told Griff, if you're not stopping, neither are we. So he said that they knew the party would be a blubber flop, so...
So those drivers had the rank of sergeant and above, had they?
No, none of them had. Some were lance bombardiers, but they were all below the rank of sergeant.
So the party was for below the rank
of
sergeant.
Oh, yes, that's yes, right. Sorry.
Yes, we just got that yes. Cleared.
So I was the only sergeant. And the sergeant major, of course, he was the... you know, the odd one. The exception to the rule.
In charge.
Yes.
And it must have been a great moment for you when that news came through, you were leaving, you're coming home.
Well, we got it on one occasion, and we thought we were going to be leaving that camp within the next few days. And then we got the bad news, and that was that we weren't going. It turned out that the ship that we were to come home on, the SS Duchess of Richmond, it had taken troops to Singapore, that's right, and 6 hours out of Singapore, it had had a propeller shaft bearing run. So it had had to go back to Singapore to get a new one made. So we'd be told in due course. So there we were in limbo. Now, during this time, all our kit that had gone into the go-down in Calcutta had caught up with us, and we were able to get it. I know I had a tin trunk, and I thought this might not manage being chucked down the hold, and I sewed it into some canvas. And that was that.
Did it all come back? That hadn't been any
stealing?
Yes.
No, nothing had been touched. We got the lot. And my little box brownie was in there, and no harm. So, anyway, I think it was about the 21st of October when we knew we were going to be transferred to a transit camp. So we said our goodbyes the next day and went to the transit camp.
Must have been... or excited going home. There must be some regret at leaving old friends. And
that's right. There was a lot of that. And there was no euphoria. You know, we didn't... Well, later on, when the adjutant spoke to me, he said, this is the moment you've been waiting for. And I said, I don't know, sir. I said, I won't believe it till we actually set foot on British soil.
Have they asked you to continue as a regular at this moment in time?
No.
I haven't approached you for that.
No. But after the war, the Remies sent me a very nice letter and wanted me to come and join them on a permanent basis.
So you were going back to this transit camp. Where was that?
It was somewhere near Rangoon itself. We were transported down there in our own trucks, and once we got there, it was a bit of a hell camp, really, because there was a shortage of water, and you got your water from standpipes, and the wind was blowing, And we had to go, and the quartermaster was issuing us with European battle dress and European underclothes, etc., etc. So, and of course, we'd handed our greatcoats in before we'd left this country, so we were getting greatcoats. Of course, everything was second hand. They said it had all been cleaned, whether it had or it hadn't, but it smelt all right. We had an awful day, short of water, and this wind was blowing all the time. We were perspiring badly, and the dust was just caking on us. And when it gets in the folds around your neck, it tends to act as an abrasive and made your neck very sore. Eventually, we got our clothes all sorted out and went back to our tents and packed, because tomorrow, the 23rd, we'd be going on the ship, we hoped. So, anyway, we couldn't get washed or anything, but there was a pond nearby, and for all we thought, well, it's a hell of a risk. We'll take a plunge in that, and it was getting dark. And we just left it a bit too late. We thought there was going to be some water coming, and there wasn't. So we went and we plunged in, and the mosquitoes were biting. And so, anyway, we at least got the dust off us and back into our tents, well eaten by mosquitoes and that, and just made the best of it. So, the following morning, after breakfast, it was a case of parading with all your kit. And, of course, with so much, it was heavy. We were transported down to the docks, which there was no way a ship could get in. They were badly damaged. So there was a landing craft that would come in and take us. I think it was a tank landing craft. So it came in, and we climbed aboard it over rocks and things and got aboard. And it was then that the adjutant said, "This is the moment you've been waiting for." And I thought, "Is it?" And out in the river was the Duchess of Richmond. Now then, moored alongside the Duchess of Richmond was the barge, like a float, as you might call it. Well, of course, the Duchess of Richmond, being a 20,000 tonner, she was just riding steady on the water, but the barge was lifting and falling the current. And so that was our first obstacle, to get out of the landing craft and up onto the barge, cross the barge, and then to try and get up onto the companionway, loaded with luggage and kit. And I remember trying to watch and you had to sort of pace it so that as the barge came up to its highest point, you got your foot on the rung of the companionway, and the man behind you gave you a push just to help you on with the other foot. Once you were on there, you could struggle up to the top. Kit that had to go down the hold was to one side, and your other kit. And then I was separated from my men, and I had to be treated as a sergeant, and the men treated as less than sergeants. But that's quite a lot on the ship. So the ship eventually sailed for Colombo.
What are your quarters on the ship?
I was sharing with four other men.
In a bunk berth?
No. Just in an area that was sort of partitioned off, I think. It was possibly some place that had been for something else and was just satisfactory.
And it would be full of people going home soon.
That's right. If my memory serves me right, we had 3,500 on board going home.
And were your memories of the journey?
Oh, yes. We sailed to Colombo, The ship wasn't going very fast. And whilst we were on that ship that I learnt the propeller shaft bearing, and we got to Colombo. When we got to Colombo, there were so many ships of all locations moored there. Of course, they'd all been getting ready to help with finishing the war. And it was like trying to find a parking place in a very full car park. I knew we were this particular morning by hearing it come over the tannoys, all the harbour stations. This was them. And I nipped out of my bed and went on deck, and I watched them, this ship. It was miraculously done. Just exit here, there and everywhere, till eventually anchors dropped fore and aft, and we were there then for the next day. There were some women's yeomanry put aboard, and one of them had a huge branch on us that she was taking, put down into the hold for her.
Did it really loud ashore?
Oh, no. No, we remained aboard. And in the evening, 6 o'clock, we pulled out. And one who I'd spoken to once or twice, he was the one that finally told me about, at this stage, about the propeller shattering. I said to him, any idea we'd be arriving in England? He said, we get to King George V in Liverpool at 11 a.m, 18th of November. This month, in other words. Thought, this is tremendous, but he'd be right. So then he was saying how this thing held up. He says, it's only travelled slowly up to here, because they're wanting to, they've uncovered the bearing, checked that it's running. He says, we'll be able to make good. He then said, the captain never left the bridge, Rangoon to Colombo, of mines. He'd done the best. Anyway, we left Colombo, and I went down the area. Dips Hospital, and a few down there, and came around.
What's the treatment for malaria that they gave you?
Quinine. And if you can't get down, you get another dose. Get away with it. It's terrible sick, but yes, it's sick. So, and I'll tell you at this point,